A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Blizzard Watch, the podcast where we watch Blizzard and their various entertainment properties with great and avowed interest, like avid predators waiting, always waiting for tasty morsels. That's us. We're kind of creepy now that I think about it. Anyway, hi, I'm Matt Rossi. I'm the host, and with me this week are two absolutely fantastic. Literally, they have cosmic ray powers. They've been to space. They've been hypocosmic. They're that fantastic. They're also amazing, so they might have spiders in it. We don't know what's going on. First up, she does practically everything. She writes lore articles. She does role-playing articles. She does pretty much everything we could possibly ask her to do, and then some. She just gives 110%. Anne Stickney. Anne, what have you been up to this week?
Well, I haven't been to space.
You haven't? Who's Mountain there race? With me?
I haven't been. I don't know. I have no idea. Somebody
I'm sure
else.
You've been to Space Mountain, though, right?
Fun fact, I have been to Disneyland a lot. I used to have an annual pass and went to Disneyland all the time. Never made it to Space Mountain.
That's unfortunate.
At the point that I was going, the majority of the time that I was going, when I had that annual pass, they had closed it. They were like renovating it or something. And then when they reopened it, the lines were so big that we never got into it. So there are two rides that I've never been on in Disneyland. Space Mountain is one of them. And then Peter Pan. For some reason, Peter Pan always had like this amazingly long line. I don't know why.
That's unfortunate. But yeah. What have you been up to other than space?
Huh?
What have you been up to other than space?
Mostly, well, let's see. Finished off Mass Effect Andromeda. Enjoyed that. World of Warcraft, just been working on achievements. Like, I've been knocking out the achievements that I've been missing. And I'm at that point, I guess, in the expansion where I'm waiting for them to come out with something new for me to do. Because I hit Exalted with Armies of Legionfall, so all I have to do, really, is wait for the weekly quest that you get, and then just kind of twiddle my thumbs. So
this week's weekly quest was not that great.
I haven't seen it yet, so I need to actually go check that out.
I literally can't spoil it for you, because it is just go find chests.
Oh, no.
Yes, it is just go find chests. It was not good.
Who wrote these?
I got back into WoW really heavily like 2 weeks ago. Yeah. I've been playing a lot. I'm already up to like halfway through Revered with those maniacs. I've got my item level up. I got those shoulders like I told you about. And I feel, on the one hand, I really like the assaults now that I've gotten a rhythm for them. And I really enjoy how that play works.
Yeah.
But I'm feeling like the Broken Shore is too... It's like fragmented. It's literally like the Broken Shore is the objective correlative of the smashed up place that it is.
It's
in that the quest flow is strange. Khadgar, my wife loves Khadgar. She's totally on board with everything Khadgar says, and he's pushing my last nerve.
At this point, it feels like, you know, they were like, we need to go to the Broken Shore and make this last stand and do all this. And there's supposed to be like this air of desperation or something. You would think. Like some kind of foreboding or some kind of at least people taking this seriously. But I don't think I've had Khadgar say much of anything to me that really was very serious.
Yeah,
at all.
Khadgar's dad jokes have reached critical mass. I think I'm going to introduce Alex now so that if we're going to complain about the broken shore, he can get in on this.
Oh, my gosh.
Thank
yeah,
God.
We didn't,
I do
we
want
do
in
that.
On that so bad.
Next, he's with us. He's editor-in-chief of the site, and he's great. He has fantastic powers. You will never see his like.
He was
Alex Ebart.
I was going to say, I have been to space recently with someone claiming to be Anne. So if you weren't there, I'm mildly concerned.
Mildly concerned.
The essence of the void. It just decided to take my corporeal form for some reason.
Because
maybe.
It granted me superpowers. So whoever that was, I'm sure I can defeat them.
Well,
in
I can't
eternal
grant
combat.
You superpowers. I mean, I don't even have them myself, and I had LASIK twice, so.
Well, I got them from going to space.
Obviously, you should have gotten lasers in space. Alex, you wanted to, we wanted to let you complain about the broken shore, so.
Yeah, they said, like, oh, the broken shore, it's our last stand. It's going to be super dark and serious, and we're all going to get the band back together and be awesome. And you get there, and, like, Khadgar's cracking jokes. Nothing on the island is particularly menacing. The war camp looks like garbage. Nobody took this seriously. Nobody believes this is the last stand. We just showed up, like, because we had to.
See, I don't
like the dungeon. I like Cathedral of Eternal Night. I think it's beautifully done, and I love the dungeon. I think it's great.
I will say that one thing I like is the plate gear you can get, like the appearances of it. I just love that set. I love it. I have put that set together. I'm wearing it constantly on my warrior. It is my favorite set. It's I like that set better than the actual set you get in the raid. Like, it looks better to me, and I like it more. I do think some of the quests are good. The quest where you're, like, looking for treasure, though, like, any quest that's just finding treasure, I'm like, sorry, no, dude, we should be focusing on demons. Your quest should be about killing demons or stopping demons in some way, not, hey, there's a neat doodad in that crypt. No, not unless that neat doodad blows up demons real good. So I don't like that.
I think the one that annoyed me the most was the one where Khadgar sent us to get however many nether shards. Mm-hmm. And you get all the nether shards, you take them back to him, and he's like, oh, never mind, I only needed one.
I get that it's a callback to his Impexis crystal
right,
thing.
But there was no follow-up to it. It's like, well, yeah. What did you need the nether shard for? I mean, now obviously you only needed one, but what for? What are you doing with it? Give us something, Khadgar! Jeez!
It's felt to me like the story here, there was one really good story element part that if you were Horde, you didn't even get. So if you were Horde, you didn't even get to see this part. It's in Anduin. It's about Anduin. So if you were worried about spoilers, it's about Anduin. You've probably seen the cinematic already.
The Anduin bit was phenomenal.
But it's not part of the story.
No, it's just an extra alliance thing that's out there, which is cool. But at the same time, it's like
I wanted these to be unlocking story moments. I didn't want them to be go get 10 chests or. Go get, like, you know,
Alex,
a
you sound
key.
Like you were trying to say something. What were you trying to
many
say?
Times. The first thing you do in a game or a zone in a game or whatever, like, the first thing you do should set the tone for that area, for that game, whatever. The first thing I ended up doing when I got to the Broken Shore, just because this is what I stumbled upon first, is Khadgar turned me into a neon cat so I could get coins for his girlfriend. This is not what I came to the Broken Shore to do, Khadgar.
It doesn't fit the scenario at all. The scenario is actually hectic and kind of it's actually very foreboding. If you do the scenario when you first come in, they have that whole bit with the cinematic where they show the Legion blowing stuff up and everyone's like, oh God, Legion. And then you go out and you fight all these demons and do stuff. And it actually feels like everything you're talking about. It feels like a last stand. It feels like a big dramatic moment. Then you get done with that scenario and then the place never really feels like that again.
Yeah, you finish that and Khadgar turns you into Nyan Cat.
Yeah, well, he never turned me into a Nyan Cat, but okay.
I feel like I do need to point out, though, two things. Number one, like I said before, Cathedral of Eternal Night, love that dungeon, think it's fantastic.
It is fantastic.
It's beautifully done. Number two, the Legion invasions that happen across the zones, I still like those. Because it takes the whole do four world quest for the emissary thing and actually turns it into something that's a little more exciting. And I love how you go into the scenario at the end and there's like two other people there with you and then you kill whatever it is and then it's like, oh, quick, get on the dragon and fly out of here. Or in some cases, like in Valshara, it's jump off the ship and somebody will catch you if you're lucky. Yeah.
I don't know if you've noticed this. There's one quest you can get when you're doing the High Mountain one.
And it's also, this happens again if you're doing certain quests on the Broken Shore, where literally what happens is you fly to the area where the quest is, and Lahan Skyhorn appears in a little box on your screen, and this is what he says: attack! And that's it. That is the setup to the quest. That is him telling you what to do. He just yells, attack! And then after you kill all the demons there, he just goes, ha 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 ha. That's it. I love that.
It was great.
That is my favorite. I am totally down with the assaults. I think they are great. I'm still doing them. Every time one's up, I farm it. One of the reasons I'm doing it is for transmog gear, because the end boss has a chance to drop one of the transmog pieces. I just got the biggest, most ridiculous shield you've ever seen. This shield makes the Bulwark of Azanoth look sensible. It's just gigantic and goofy.
Good.
And I love it. That stuff's great.
Discreet Lol in the chat channel. I feel like we have to point this out. Discreet Lol in the chat channel says, the story of the patch is literally class related. Ian already said it. The class mounts actually have good quest lines. Okay, well, I'm not going to argue that. What I am going to say is, how long do we have to wait before we get the good quest lines? And yeah, why do we have to wait time. That long to get the good quest lines? Shouldn't they all be good?
Yeah, and the unlocking of I understand the unlocking of the Tomb of Sargeras is taking a while. I understand that you have to progress to a certain degree. Like, I have flying now, though, and I do feel like it is time to start giving me the good quest lines, is all I'm going to say.
Yeah.
And there is stuff I like. There is stuff I like in this
patch.
Alex,
what were you saying?
The jokey nature of the Broken Shore just doesn't jive with me. Like, it's the whole expansion has been a build-up to getting back to the Broken Shore, and getting there, and it's a big bundle of jokes, is just, I'm not buying it. It does not hold my interest. That's not what the Broken Shore
is. It has its good points. It's just that I don't know if the good points outweigh the rest of it right now.
I think, honestly,
once that class stuff comes out, I may change my mind and go, oh, this is the most amazing place I've ever been. But
I'm going to just say
present
this because
time, it doesn't feel that good.
I really feel like the problem here is that they did Suramar. And then if you went through Suramar and did the whole Insurrection storyline beginning to end, I'm one of the rare people that feels like Insurrection went too long. Like, there's a point in Insurrection where I start begging it to end, and it's about 10 quests before it actually ends. And a lot of those quests are just filler quests. But nevertheless, for the most part, Insurrection unfolds in a regular, almost perfect way, like where every quest feeds into the story. They don't feel, there's only one, like when it starts just sending you back to places you've been to set up a dampener to screw up the magical field, that's when I was like, no, this is dumb, just let me get to the fight.
I actually liked all of it, but
I get that most people did, but nevertheless, I feel like it's a huge, even if you don't like parts of it, overall, it's a massive success. It maintained a tone. It never feels like a joke. There are lighthearted moments, but they're lighthearted moments from Oculeth, who is kind of crazy. And when Oculeth says something, you're never sure if that's a joke or if Oculeth is just that messed up.
And,
you know what I mean? It's in character. It means something. It's
and
not
humor
just
from the other characters.
Joke.
Yeah, and humor from the other characters, like, Valtois was kind of funny, and she was funny in her way, in like her subtle kind of way, which was very different than WoW's usual wackadoo over-the-top humor, like you get with Khadgar.
With Valtois, you didn't know if she was making fun of you or not. Like, sometimes you did know, in fact, she was making fun of you, but usually it was like, is that a dig at me, or is she just being catty?
It was a super in-character way to do it.
It occurs to me that we've been talking about this for like the past 15 minutes or so, and maybe we want to get to the news.
Well, all right.
We're still doing the intro to the show, and we're stuck on the Broken Shore, guys.
Much like the game. Anyway, you know, as is usually the case, if you have an email for us, that we're not going to talk about that yet because it's top stories. Haha, I got thrown off. You know, top stories. I'm going to mention this one because it's a pretty big deal. Christy Golden tweeted yesterday that she is working at Blizzard. She didn't tweet what she's doing. We don't know what her job there is yet.
She's not allowed to say yet. She got hired there to do something. She just can't say what it is yet.
I don't know what it is yet, but this is the person who has written some of the best Warcraft fiction out there. So if she's going to be working on any sort of creative development there, that's a good thing.
Maybe we'll get consistent characterization for anybody in World of Warcraft ever.
I mean, you know, speculating here, and I don't, I'd like to hear Anne speculate on it too. One job that comes to mind is one that was recently vacated was senior VP of, you know, creative development. That's with Chris Metzen gone. I can't think of anybody that I wouldn't. Yeah, she's like a perfect choice to fill in some of that role. So I don't know what you think, what she might be hiring to do, but.
It's possible. I'm leaning more towards, and this is just me, based on what we've heard recently, Blizzard just opened their own publishing house. Like, they have their own now. They are reprinting all of these old books and everything, and they have their own department to do all of this stuff. Like, they're even reprinting the old Tokyopop manga and stuff. So I'm wondering if it has something to do with that, because, you know, Christy is... She's a phenomenal author, phenomenal writer. She's done the World of Warcraft book. She's also done a bunch of Star Wars. And if you haven't read any of her Star Wars books, oh, you should go do that. But she's also, because she's written this many books, she's really familiar with the publishing industry, I'm sure. So I'm wondering if it has something to do with that.
Yeah, I would not be surprised at all if she ends up on the publishing side of things, which is why people are kind of going crazy about this news. Like, oh, this is the biggest surprise ever. But it's like, well, Christy, most of her work is licensed published novels for various games or just it's licensed work. So her ending up in a company that she has done licensed work for, overseeing or participating in getting licensed work done, that's not a leap to me. That seems pretty natural.
It seems like really logical kind of fit. And the thing is like, out of all of the authors that they've... I think Christy was the one who wrote the first book for them. Like, she did Lord of the Clans way back when. The only book that predates that one is the one that Metzen wrote for Blood and Honor. So, Christy's been doing this for a
Lord of the Clans predates Cycle of Hatred?
Yes.
Okay.
This has been going... She's been writing for them for a very, very, very long time. So, it's not illogical by any stretch of the imagination to even assume that she would have something to do with creative development as well. Maybe they brought her in for that kind of thing because she knows the universe like the back of her hand. She's been writing it. She's been writing it right alongside Metzen, only she's just been doing it with the novels and he's been coming up with the universe. So I don't know. I really don't know. But like I said, since they did just come out with that whole announcement thing where they were opening their own, publishing house within Blizzard and they were reprinting these books as the Blizzard Legends and things like that, that maybe it has something to do with that. We won't know until she can say. She can't say right now.
Yeah.
They allowed her to say that she was going to be coming to work at Blizzard, but they didn't. She's not allowed to say in what capacity as of yet. And I'm sure as soon as she's allowed to say it, she will tell us on Twitter and we will all rejoice because really, I don't know why they didn't hire her before now. She's been working for them for so long.
Yeah, I mean, it's also true that other people that used to work there, for instance, Mickey Nielsen doesn't work there anymore. And he used to do a job very similar to what you're talking about. He used to help manage their
story
online publication.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's lots of places where they might have put her and that she'd do a great job for. So that's, you know. But it's good news regardless. It's a good hire on their part, in my opinion. Unrelated to that, however, Heroes of the Storm is going to be getting battlefield rotations. And I don't understand what that means, but I've been playing a little Heroes now, so I'm going to throw it over to Alex because I'm sure he does understand it.
I mean, they've been in since Heroes 2.0. They just kind of explained it a little more. Basically, Heroes of the Storm has a total of 13 maps now, and the idea is... If you're new, learning 13 maps is kind of overwhelming. Even if you're not new, you know, with that many maps, do you need 13 maps? Could it be more exciting if, you know, an old favorite went away and you got a little break from it for a while, then it came back and now it's exciting to play it again, that kind of thing. Initially, they went down to 6 maps in the rotation, which was kind of boring. I'll say that much. I was in favor and I'm still in favor of the map rotation. 6 maps was not enough. That got tedious. They've bumped it up to 9. So far the plan is 3 times per competitive season, they're going to rotate the maps. So some will go away, some will come back, then the ones that went away will come back later, and so on.
So it's not at all like if you're into World of Warcraft and they have like a battlefield thing where they highlight one. It's nothing like that. It's more like other...
No, it's It's like if you could only play Warsong Gulch, Arathi Basin, and Ultrak Valley this month, but next month you could play
Eye of the Storm.
Other one. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, no, that's I don't know. I've been playing Heroes more because they gave me like 20-something characters to play.
Yeah.
So I try and play more now. I'm still terrible. Like you guys remember from the leveling stream when we did it. I'm very
that's
bad.
Fine.
You and but, me both. So right there with you, buddy.
one of the things that happened is now I have like Artanis and Alarak because they're yep. the mega bundle I got has those guys in it. So now I can wander around playing Artanis or Probius or Alarak and basically. I also got free skins. Like, for instance, I got Sonya the Barbarian from Diablo 3. I got her the Wrath skin, not Wrath of Lich King, like literally the warrior set Wrath with an Ashkandi and a Quel'Sarar in her hands.
Yep.
So I've been playing it because of that, and I had no idea what was going on with in terms of the maps. I still don't, because as you pointed out, there's 13 of them.
Yeah. And,
you know, all I know is pick a lane, run down it. So anything that would make it a little easier for me to figure out what I'm doing, that's welcome in my opinion.
Yeah, they just reduce the pool. I mean, the danger of it is, of course, you know, if you're a person who has one specific favorite map and it's not in a particular rotation, you may not play on it for months. And that sucks. But, you know, every map someone hates, someone else loves. And that's kind of the difficulty of the rotation, that if the one you hate is out, you feel good. But if that's your favorite, you feel really bad.
So yeah. Here's my question, because I'm not super familiar with Heroes of the Storm, right? Can you do custom games in Heroes of the Storm? Can you like invite a bunch of people and do?
You can invite like people you know to a custom.
Okay,
game.
Can you use maps that are not in the normal rotation when you're creating a custom game? Is it just they just disabled in like quick matches or whatever?
Yeah, it's disabled in like quick match and ranked play and anything you queue up for.
Okay.
The oddity that has arisen from this is the maps in the rotation are not necessarily the same maps they use in HGC for pro play. So pro players who want to practice on maps in HGC can't do it just by queuing up and playing the game anymore. They specifically have to prearrange like scrimmage matches with other teams. They can do custom matches on the HGC maps. That's
wow.
A little weird.
Okay, that's weird. That seems like shooting yourself in the foot as far as the esports goes.
And it also means, you know, people who might be interested in pro play and have been playing Heroes of the Storm but have never watched it before, if they started playing now and their only experience is with the maps in the map rotation and they tune in to watch a pro match, they might not recognize the map that people are playing on.
Where are these pirates coming from?
Right.
Why are there pirates involved in this? Why is there a boat? I don't get it.
Yeah,
you know, there. All right, the next one I wanted to talk about purely because it's me, and it's not that big a deal. It's not really tremendous news, but there was a bunch of hot fixes yesterday. Most of them were relatively unimportant, but this one grabbed my attention. If you play a warrior, you've probably leapt down from the warrior class hall at some point in this expansion and had the game disconnect you. And when you came back in, you fell and took damage in the middle of Azuna for no reason you could understand.
That he was doing that to me on Flight Pass every once in a while. It stopped doing that on Flight Pass.
Well, this particular thing is warrior specific. It's jumping down from the class order hall.
And that's supposedly the only way you have to leave, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You can't get out of that place without jumping down. So you're taking your chances. I had this as recently as like 2 weeks ago. I jumped down from the class order hall to the Broken Shore, but it disconnected me. And when I came back, I fell and took a massive amount of damage on Azuna. But they've apparently finally, this bug has been in the game since Legion launched. This bug has been around. They've been trying to fix this bug since Legion launch? Last September? I want to say last September. Was it like the last day of August?
I don't remember.
Somewhere
I think
there.
It was either the last day of August or the first day of September. I forget now. But the bug has been in the game that long. And they just finally supposedly hot fixed it and it's out. And so far it hasn't happened. I haven't taken any strange falls. So the only way I'll know if the bug comes back is if I disconnect in the middle of jumping down. But it was such a big deal for me just because I've been having it happen to me throughout this expansion. And I've still yet to understand why the supposed, as far as I can tell, the geographical center of the Broken Isles is a hill in Azuna.
Yeah.
Because that's where you go. That's where you end up. That's where it drops you, is this weird random hill in Azuna.
I've been playing a warrior this expansion too, so I've had the exact same, why am I here?
Yeah, I know I was jumping to Dalaran. That's where I said I was going. I don't know why I disconnected.
Like, the Valkyr just threw me in the wrong direction, I guess.
Have you noticed ever since the fix went in that you sometimes you don't do the drop and comet land anymore?
Wasn't that always like questionable whether you got the animation or not?
I was getting it pretty much nonstop unless the disconnect. But now sometimes I just show up. Like, I'm just there. It's no big rocket landing. It's just, hey, yeah, I'm here.
Because sometimes the spell effect around you when you're jumping never showed up for me either.
Oh, yeah, like the spell effect could take forever. Like, you could land, you could mount up, you could ride away, and then you could see it happen behind you as you were riding away from it.
Yeah.
That's how long that spell effect could take. So, yeah, that hasn't been hotfixed, but at least the disconnecting should be. This was completely trivial, but it was important to me. So there you go. Finally, and this is one that I didn't even know about until we reported it the other day. They're putting out 2 Overwatch books. They were found basically Amazon. And you want to talk about them?
Because you probably know more. There's 2 books that are coming out. One of them is The Art of Overwatch, and it's like 360 pages of art, like art we've never seen before, and also concept art and things like that. I'm assuming like maybe even stills and like 3D models and stuff from cinematics and stuff, but who knows? And it also has behind-the-scenes commentary along with it. So big, huge art book, and you can get the book right now. You could pre-order it in hardcover for $50, or they have a collector's edition, and the collector's edition comes in a clamshell box with a tracer slipcover, and it also comes with 3 unique prints, and that's 100, but it comes with 3 unique prints, and I'm assuming that these are suitable for framing and everything.
And it's already coming up with a way to sell somebody's kidneys.
I'm trying. Anyway, the other book, this is the one that I find actually even more interesting. The other book that they're coming out with is all of the Overwatch comics that have been released over the past, well, to date, I imagine. I'm hoping it includes the latest one that just came out. But all of these Overwatch comics that have come out are being collected in a print edition. And it's going to have all of the comics, and apparently there's also going to be short stories by Robert Brooks and Matt Burns, which I didn't know about, but I guess that's a thing. However, that one is a lot more affordable. The book is only $20, and it's a hardcover. A hardcover for $20 is a pretty good deal.
Wait, a hardback? They put out a lot of comics.
Yeah.
That's a lot to collect for $20.
It's a pretty sizable book. I mean, it's going to be a pretty sizable collection. There's also an Overwatch coloring book available that has 75 pieces of concept art, paintings, sketches. It's kind of like a light version of the art book, but you could color it yourself, which is pretty cool. I don't think that there is a release date for the coloring book as of yet. I believe that both the Art of Overwatch and the Overwatch Comics Anthology, both of those editions come out in October, so it's going to be a while before they do hit the shelves.
Yeah, what was interesting to me is we mentioned the whole Blizzard's has their own publishing thing now, or they're starting one, but this stuff is all being published by Dark Horse Comics. So they don't have their own thing going yet, or I don't know if they have some kind of partnership for their publishing stuff through Dark Horse. I don't know. But if you're planning to check out The Art of Overwatch, planning to buy it, or just want to take a look, you should do it through blizzardwatch.com/Art of Overwatch, one word, and you'll see everything you need to see.
All right, cool. Well, thank you, guys. We're going to talk about emails now because we do that here on the show. If you have an email for the show, please send it to podcast@blizzardwatch.com. Put Blizzard Watch or podcast in the subject line so we know it's for this show and not for the lore show, because we get email for that there too. And try and keep them somewhat concise if you can. I mean, we try to answer as many as we can, so don't worry too much about it, but it's helpful if you can. You can make them bite-sized chunks like a tweet. If you can make them tweet length, that's perfect. But do what you can. As Anne has to read them, and she's going to do so now. So, Anne?
Okay, first email, and I'm laughing about this because we were literally just talking about this for however long.
Oops.
Okay, first email is from Degers, who says, "Hey guys, long-time patron, first-time writer coming in with a spicy question. There's a Broken Shore world quest where Khadgar tasks you with digging through mud for Kirin Tor coins he dropped on a demon-infested beach. He says the coins were a gift for someone, but stammers and changes the subject before revealing their name. After collecting all the coins, he mentions that he was struggling to find a replacement gift. I know this was probably just a one-off gag quest, but I want to hear your speculation on it. Who do you guys think is likely to be Dadgar's honey? Who do you want it to be? Thanks, Deegers.
Probably Madara.
Is that who you want it to be, or just who you think it is?
I don't want it to be anybody. I kind of want Khadgar to go away at this point, but I think it's Madara. Because they've been kind of flirty throughout the expansion.
I honestly had not thought of Khadgar as the kind of person who has a girlfriend. Even during that quest, I haven't really thought about it. So, I got nothing. There was a while I thought he and Cordana had something going on, but that spectacularly didn't work out. So then again, it's a demon infested beach. Maybe he's trying to make things work. I don't know. So yeah, I'll go with Cordana just for Warlord's nostalgia. Is that the right word? Can you be nostalgic for Warlords? I don't know. But yeah, I'm going with Cordana. It's there for Cordana, who is dead. So I don't know.
I like Zaitam in the chat channel who says he's trying to bribe Jaina back. That's a good idea. I mean, I'm going to guess that it's Modera because that's who they've been hinting at. But I always had this thing back in Warlords where I thought it would be really cute if Khadgar got together with Great Mother Gaia because that's Thrall's grandma.
Ew.
And just the awkwardness involved in all of that.
Wintervale at that year is just going to be terrifying. Why don't you call me son? That will never happen.
I just think it'd be funny if the two of them, you know, got together. And then Khadgar would be forced to have this really awkward conversation with Thrall.
isn't Khadgar technically in his 40s?
Yes.
Not actually in his 70s?
I don't know. So I don't know where he's at exactly.
He doesn't look like he's in his 70s now. I mean, yeah, he'd be like 40 or 50. I think 50 is probably a good age for him at this point because he would have been old enough to be a seasoned apprentice. When he went to Medivh, he didn't go to Medivh as a completely untrained rube. He was already like, you know, the Kirin Tor had already trained him for years. He didn't just show up, I don't know anything about magic. So I'm thinking he was like late teens, early 20s.
Madara is also older, but not old,
I don't know him.
And they had their flirty moments, so that's my assumption.
Yeah, there was this whole like thing where.
Do you want me to kiss it or something? Is that what she says?
Yeah, and I'm like, no, I don't like you. You have no established history here. There are so many other people who would work better and be funny.
Like Great Mother Gaia. Man, I could.
I just want to see the conversation where he tries to gently explain to Thrall that, yeah, you know your grandmother, not your real grandmother, your grandmother from the alternate dimension.
I totally
like her.
as an Alliance player who has only played the last few expansions mostly as Alliance, I know who Madara is a whole lot better than Thrall's grandma. I don't know who the hell that woman is. I've never met her.
Well,
so yeah. Now we get to have this
weird
dating game situation where we've got Great Mother Gaia, Madara, and I'm going to say Cordana gets to be in charge.
They're all like behind the curtain. He gets to ask the questions.
Bachelorette number one. I like terrible jokes.
I'll burn you to death with the power of the fell.
Okay, I'm definitely not picking you. Bachelorette number two.
Okay, so thanks, Deegers, I think. I'm still not 100% on that. Our next question is from Nogarth, who says, "Hey team, Nogarth Dwarf Paladin here from Whisperwind US. I was wondering what you guys thought about portals at the end of old dungeons and raids. It would be nice to be able to port back to the beginning of the old raid I just soloed and go on to the next closest one instead of hearthing back. I've been running the Pandaria raids and going from Heart of Fear to Throne of Thunder can be a slight of a slog when you finish each one. I know that having the handy portals to the shrines helps a lot, but those trips back out there seem like a lot sometimes. Thanks for taking the time to read and answer my question, and thanks for having such an amazing site and everything you guys do. I hope for the best for all of you, Nogarth." You know what? I'm just going to jump in here right off the bat and say that my favorite round of dungeons was always the ones that were out there in the lake in Zangarmarsh. specifically because, you know, you had to swim underwater to get to them and everything, and that was kind of a pain. But when you went inside, they usually looped back on each other. There was that one dungeon where it looped back on itself, and when you finished the dungeon, you were right back where you started.
Washington did that too, though. That wasn't just that. I remember specifically Monotombs. When you do Monotombs,
it's
you get to the
thing.
End of Monotombs.
You get to the end.
It drops you down.
Right. You get to the end, and it loops you right back to the beginning again. And I loved that kind of dungeon design where it was a big circle, and you didn't realize it was a circle until you were getting ready to leave. And it was like, I'm back at the beginning. How convenient is this?
Darmal did it even better because you finished one and there was a portal to the next one in the dungeon.
Yeah, that one was pretty cool too.
Well, original Darmal,
it was all interconnected.
Like, yeah. You didn't even have to like leave it to go to the next part. That's one of the things actually I missed about Strat. When they changed Strat, they sealed off the doorway between living and dead Strat.
Oh, I loved that though.
You used to be able to like, I used to love, you know, we'd go do dead Strat, and then like if we had a good group, we'd be like, well, you want to go clear out living? Live side, and we'd go do live side.
You'd and you
go
didn't
through
even
that
have
gate.
To leave the instance. You just went through the gate.
Yeah. I that's one of the things that when they chop up dungeons, they've lost that in a lot of cases. One that didn't lose it was Blackrock Depths, but Blackrock Depths is so annoying just for its sheer size that it doesn't feel like as cool as it did with Strat or with like Dire Maul.
Yeah, I mean,
Blackrock Depths is just a gigantic.
I like Blackrock Depths, but recognize that when you're queuing up for it, it is not very clear what you're supposed to do in the particular section you've been placed in or where things are.
Blackrock Depths was a dungeon that I liked when me and a bunch of friends were going and we knew we were going to be spending our afternoon in it. You know what I mean? You're going to be here for 2-3 hours. Just get used to it now. Make your plans and go in and do it. But when you're trying to queue for it in the Dungeon Finder, this is not a dungeon that translated to the Dungeon Finder well at all.
Yeah, BRD didn't translate very well, and Maradon didn't really either.
No, Maradon didn't.
Maradon has kind of arbitrary endpoints, and you have to like check specifically which endpoint is relevant to you this time you've queued because it's not obvious. Yeah.
Maradon is another example of a dungeon where, on the one hand, you could just do it as much as you wanted to. You could like head to a specific boss and consider that kind of the end for your run.
We went in there on the leveling stream. We just did the whole thing, didn't we?
We kind of stumbled our way through the whole thing.
We just meandered through the whole thing, the whole shebang.
Yeah. Yeah, we had really no idea what we were doing. Let's be completely frank. You know, we were like, what? Did they change this? Is it the same? I don't even remember. How does this go?
Yeah, I remember when I was leveling in Alt just on my own after they did, you know, made Maradon queueable, and there were a lot of groups where just out of like muscle memory or an assumption of what the end boss was, we would go up to go a certain way, kill it, kill that boss, and then be like, why didn't we get our loot bag? It's like, oh, it wanted us to kill this other one this time for some reason.
Yeah, like Celebras isn't the end of one of the sections, which is just strange.
Like the end of one section is that dude who stealths and shoots you with a bow.
Yeah, the sadder guy.
Yeah.
And that's directly on the path towards getting to the like the last part of Maradon.
Yeah,
like,
but
that's
an endpoint. Except when you get a different endpoint, you still vaguely go past that guy, so it's not clear what you're going to do.
To get back to what he's asking, I think Ann's point that just designing the dungeon so it takes you back is the most elegant solution, and in many cases, it's the best one. But I wouldn't mind a portal there that takes you just to the front door. Just so you could zone back out. One dungeon, I was just running this one. You know Heimal?
Yeah.
You guys ever? Like,
yeah.
Heimal is enormous and extremely confusing to run. Like, it's, where do I go now? But one of the things I like is that at certain points you zone back and the portal takes you right outside. Like, you just go outside. You go through the portal and you go out of the dungeon. It doesn't take you to the front door. It just literally puts you back out at the entrance. I like that about Heimal. It's much easier to get out of Heimal at the end when you kill like the Imperator. When you kill that guy, you say to yourself, I wonder why Cho'Gall doesn't do anything. Oh, this wasn't on Mythic. I guess that's why. And then you just go out the portal and you're done. And that's so I do think that the portal thing can work. I think it's certainly not a bad idea. But I would like, I prefer.
Looping. Yeah, I like the looping thing because it feels really organic, I guess.
A lot of the Burning Crusade dungeons feel like places.
Yeah.
And that's really a case like the ones you're talking about. Like the Auchendune ones, It feels the way it's set up. It's not like the thing you go through isn't intended to be. You can tell this was a part of a building that got blown off, and that's why this is here. And you drop down a floor. You drop down a floor because this got sheared off when the place got destroyed. So yeah, a lot of the later dungeons were designed in such a way that you can get out more easily.
I mean, there's the argument that's like, does it really take that long to run back to the entrance? But at the same time, I don't really care. They can add those things if they want. I see no problem with it.
Pretty big dungeon.
It takes a while to run back to the end of any raid.
Heart of Fear is pretty sizable.
Any 5 or 6 boss dungeon or raid, it'll surprise you how long it takes you to run from the beginning to the end. Like, it'll take you 3-4 minutes. And I know 3-4 minutes isn't that much, but it's kind of a long time to be doing nothing but running.
Yeah.
You know? So
I agree.
I'm okay with there being a way out, is what I'm saying.
Okay. Our next email is from Johannes Seaback of Silverhand, U.S., who says, as a player, I've got 2 major passions, Paladin lore and Calderoy lore. You can understand, then, that Delus Moonfang is one of my favorite followers in-game. I was thinking, with the sudden addition of the Night Elf Paladin, or Nelfadin, no. As an NPC class choice, is it an NPC class choice? It's not an NPC class choice, is it? It's an NPC class choice. It's not a player class choice.
Right, no, it's not a player thing. But there is an NPC who made that choice for her
class. Yeah, Delus Moonfang is a Night Elf Paladin, for people who are not aware who this person is. Anyway, with the sudden addition of the Night Elf Paladin as an NPC class choice, that the whole concept really isn't all that far-fetched. Tyrande, a priestess, routinely uses ranged and melee weapons, just like her crew in the Sisterhood of Alun. This really isn't far off from the basic origins of paladins, who were basically warriors taught to cast, and priests thrown in plate and given a big object to swing around. What I'm saying here is, we've been given Blood Knights, Vindicators, and Sunwalkers to march alongside us, members of the Silver Hand. Okay, I'm skipping forward here to the question. Do you think when Night Elf Paladins are added, they're going to be members of the Sisterhood or a whole new startup group much like the Sunwalkers? And I'm not going into all of these parenthetical asides because this email is really long. So what do you guys think? First off, do you think they're going to add Night Elf Paladins? And if they add Night Elf Paladins to the game, are they going to be part of the Sisterhood of Alun, or are they going to be their own new order?
Do you want to go out first, Alex, or am I?
Yeah, I think they could add them. I think they should add them. And I see no reason why they can't be part of the Sisterhood of Alun or whatever. I mean, I ranted about this on Twitter recently, but Tyrande is a priestess in World of Warcraft, but she's not the priest class of World of Warcraft, right? Like, she doesn't, the holy shadow discipline thing, Tyrande's not about that.
She's
Night
kind
Elves
of her
have
own
a different
thing.
She's a priestess of the moon. It's a Warcraft 3 thing. She's still that thing. She's not a World of Warcraft priest. The Sisters of the Moon, like, I think in the books they describe, doesn't she wear chainmail and stuff in battle?
I believe so.
So,
she's like a huntress.
Why? Right. So if she can wear like leather and chainmail and be awesome and be a priestess who has a bow, I can't see why there can't be one that puts on plate armor. It's
Plus,
the
I
same
mean,
organization.
Yeah. I'm just going to point out there's also the champion that they added for the paladins, Neris Moonfang, who's like an ancestor to Delus. And he's like a ghost who is a paladin. So he's a ghost paladin. He is a night elf ghost paladin. At this point, so, I feel like Night Elves could have paladins.
Was he a Night Elf was he a paladin when he was alive, or was this just something he picked up while he was dead?
His thing's all complicated. I haven't gotten to this yet on my paladin. I'm just reading about it, but it's a whole complicated thing where the Legion showed up and he was terrified, so he made a deal with the demons because he didn't know what else to do, and now he's trying to redeem himself, and that's he pledges himself to the Knights of the Silver Hand to begin to atone for his actions. And Delus
after
is like
he's dead?
Yes, as a ghost.
Okay.
And so the High Lord, the High Lord goes and it's all a thing. But Delus Moonfang is even involved in this. She's like she's helping redeem him. Like I guess he's the whole thing is my point is just at this point paladins night elves have established, we'll take night elves. Boom, there's 2 of them in the Silver Hand now.
Yeah, I mean I kind of want to put the revelation of Delus Moonfang into perspective. She put on armor. The end. Anybody can do that. Why can't there be Night Elf Paladins? There's no reason there can't be, because it's just a priest who put on some freaking armor. Is that a revelation?
Literally, she was a priest. Now, it you could very well just have them establish their own order, much the same way the Blood Knights or the Sunwalkers did. I wouldn't have a problem with that, but that order would still be just as much tied up to the Priesthood of Alun as the Silver Hand is tied up to the Church of the Holy Light. Do you know what I mean? Like warrior, like paladins still, you know, the human paladins still revere the light much the same way that human priests do. A Night Elf paladin is still going to revere Alun the same way that the priestesses do.
Yeah, and this,
it doesn't matter if they're actually in the Sisterhood of Alun or if they're their own order. They're still basically going to be looking to Alun. That's going to be their thing because they're Night Elves.
I can see them as just like another division of the Sisterhood. I mean,
yeah.
You have,
if you want to use an example from another game, in Dragon Age Inquisition, the Inquisition basically becomes an arm of the Chantry that guards the Chantry. You could have these, like, you know, Silver Knights guarding the Sisterhood. It wouldn't be a problem.
Yeah, it's just, you know, members of the Sisterhood who decided to throw some plate on. There you go.
Like, I'm not that great with a bow, but I like hitting things, so I did the plate hitting things. I let her do the kind of wearing chain.
I'm not so good at the
you.
Shooty, but I really like smacking things around with that metal thing. Sword? Yeah, that thing.
I mean, as far as whether or not they will, I have no idea. I've never made money guessing what Blizzard's going to do. But in terms of, you know, should they? Yeah, why not?
It feels like a likely thing that they would add it.
For that matter, I mean, I could see more Horde races getting paladins, for that matter. Some of them are real hard sell for me. Like, I have a real hard time with goblin paladins because there's a level of selflessness there that the goblins are constantly going to be, what's in it for me? And the answer is nothing.
Well, they have priests.
But priests don't do the same. The paladins have a much more, you know, I'm going to go out there and protect and possibly die in service to, like, you know, my ethos.
If the goblin priests can, this is not a political statement. If they can have for-profit health care among goblin priests, they can probably have for-profit paladins.
It's a hard sell for me, but I'm not saying it's not possible. But undead paladins, I got no problem with at this point. Why not? I died. That doesn't mean I gave up the light. I mean, we've got an undead paladin running around like Nax right now. He's still being a paladin, still calling it light.
Yeah, we're making Anne angry again with our
no.
Let's have fun with classes perspective.
I think we're interrupting her.
No. None of these things. It was just one of those. Somebody's going to bring up Blood Elf Druids again, and it's going to be stupid, isn't it?
Do it.
That's fine.
Bringing
up Blood Elf Druids.
No, do not. Anyway, all right. So, yeah, thanks, Johannes. Next email is from Suggle Kitten, who says, "Hi, y'all. I've been kind of off this expansion, and I finally figured out why. It's all the catch-up mechanics. I realize, what's the point in trying to get all the AP points or gear when I just have to wait until the next patch and they will give me everything easy? What's your thoughts on this?" Suggle Kitten.
You think they're giving us AP points easily?
Oh, yeah, they are not.
I think you might seriously have a strange and skewed definition of easy.
I'm going to be honest. I've felt this.
AP points?
Yeah.
Okay, man, I'm still... grinding away on that freaking weapon.
Because the next patch is going to come around. Like, I'm not raiding, so I don't need to be on the bleeding edge, have, you know, as many points as everybody else in my raid. So I don't feel like playing that much. I'm like, okay, I don't need to keep up an AP, because the next patch, when they inevitably add more junk, they're going to increase artifact knowledge. And then my first piece of AP, my first AP item I get after that patch, it's going to give me every single freaking point I missed right away. I don't care. Because it scales so ridiculously now. Like, what? An AP item is 13.5 billion AP? That's every point I need.
No, it's like 3 million at the highest. Although there's a 20 million AP one you get for killing Gul'dan. And my artifact knowledge isn't all that, like, isn't super maxed.
There's also
yet,
missions so. That you get if there's a particular part of the Broken Shore. Like, one of those buildings will give you missions that you can send your followers on that'll get you one that's like 20-something? 12 to 20-something? Yeah. I don't know. Like a ridiculous amount of AP.
For example, on an alt now, you can take an alt straight to, like, artifact knowledge 20 or 25 or something now.
25, as long as you've got it on your main.
So, yeah, I've got it on my main. So my alt, if I just wait until it has artifact knowledge 25, I use one good AP item. I have most of the traits of my artifact in one item.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me, though. That doesn't make me not want to play the game. Or, if anything, it makes it easier for me to deal with my alts when I feel like playing them.
Yeah, I don't mind it because I feel no obligation to play when I don't feel like playing.
See, that's the thing is, like, in terms of my main, I think the catch-up stuff's great. because like my main is now pretty close to 900, like item level. I don't have tier sets. I mean, so I don't get like tier bonuses, but I'm in an okay place if I want to do some pickup raiding or what have you. Like, or if we start, if the guild I'm casual in starts raiding again, I'm in a good place to do it, like when Tomb comes out. And I'm fine with that because Tomb is going to like just blow the doors off of gearing again. Like, by the time the LFR Tomb gear is like item level 885, so it defaults to slightly better than the stuff you get, you know, for like turning in nether shards. Like LFR gear is 885, the nether shard stuff is 880. My problem isn't so much that the catcher mechanisms exist, is that they make dungeons pretty much obsolete. Like, they increased dungeon levels with 7.2, right? I'm positive they did. They made heroic gear like 845 epics, and they made mythic stuff like 860.
Something like that, yeah.
But why would I bother when I can get an 880 piece that can also Titan Forge up to even higher by just turning in nether shards? And it's a guaranteed piece. Like, I'm going to get a piece of gear. I don't have to hope a piece drops. I don't have to roll coins to get a piece. I know I'm going to get it. You know what I'm saying?
That, to me, is kind of like ties into why right now I'm working on knocking out achievements. It's because I don't really feel like I have much else to do at this point. Because, again, you know, there's the whole the AP thing. I have like, I think 4 or 5 more levels to get before I max out all the new things on my weapons.
What's the max level right now? 50?
I don't know.
54?
Like that. I have no idea. All I know is it takes like an obscene amount of AP, but I'm not even really like grinding the AP. It's just, oh, there's an invasion up, I'll go do that. Or, oh, I have an emissary today, I'll go do that. And invariably when I do that, I end up with a bunch of AP, and I put that towards the weapon. And if that means I get another, you know, I can put another point in it, great. If not, okay, well, I'll just come back tomorrow and try again. No big deal. But it also means that there isn't really, like, major motivation for me to be playing right now. But that's fine. I don't mind when the game does that every now and again.
Yeah. See, for me, I wanted to keep my other specs up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been impossible.
See, I haven't messed with my other specs at all. So
yeah, I want to be able to tank if necessary. So I have to have a DPS spec and a tank spec. But I have not even touched my tanking weapon. I haven't done the thing to unlock the tanking artifact beyond a certain point. I haven't, you know, none of it. Because the AP just to get my main weapon up is so massive.
Yeah,
even with the artifact knowledge scaling and all that, it's just a lot.
Just keep in mind that I play a rogue, so really there's no reason to have those other two unlocked unless I feel like playing them for whatever reason. But I don't. I mean, assassination's working for me, so I'm just going to stick with it, because why not? It's working. I'm having fun with it. I'm still having fun with the class. And I'm having fun, you know, running around doing all these achievements and things that I haven't done yet. It's just, that's kind of my only motivation to play right now. It's a quiet kind of motivation, and it's one that I don't mind, because I do like it when we get that lull every now and again, as long as it doesn't last for the next 12 months.
Yeah. We know that next month is going to be Tomb of Zargaris. So.
Yeah, we're going to have the raid out, and then there's going to be more stuff to do again, and the class quests are going to unlock, and that'll be more stuff to do all over again. I still have alts that I'm playing. It's not like there's not stuff to do. It's just, in terms of endgame stuff, there's not quite as much to keep me motivated right now. And maybe that's different if you're doing raiding or if you're doing like serious PvP or something like that, but I'm doing neither of those things. I'm kind of playing it kind of casual, this expansion, so I don't know. Okay, last question is from Zorathos from Zoljin, who says, my question for you is, do demon hunters really have a faction they support because of their race? I don't think Illidan has a faction choice himself, so why can't we just pick what elf we want to be and then choose what faction we want to be? Thank you for all you do. I love the show. Zorathos, I'm going to answer this really quick, and then I'm going to turn it over to the other two, but it's not about what race your demon hunter wants to be. It's about what race the Horde and Alliance will accept into it, I think, is where that distinction lies. Because they aren't going to, the Horde is not going to take a Night Elf. And they don't care if it's a Demon Hunter or not. They're not going to take a Night Elf. Vice versa with the Blood Elves and the Alliance. There was a lot of bad blood in Pandaria. They aren't real keen on the Blood Elves anymore. But
yeah,
Rossi,
if they
go
ever
ahead.
Were. No, I agree. You basically have said what I was thinking. It's not a question of your Night Elf could head to Orgrimmar for some reason, but even, plus keep in mind, even 10, you know, when the last time you were out was BC, like the middle, like you went to Outland and you trained with Illidan and all that stuff. You probably became a demon hunter because of the Third War. And the last time you saw the orcs, it was kind of a tentative piece after they killed Cenarius and helped the demons blow up a lot of your forests. And it's complicated. And I don't think you'd be particularly keen on them, even if you didn't really care much one way or the other. To you, the demons are more important. It's more along the lines of you show up at the front door and they'd probably like shoot you. You know, it's that they don't like Night Elves. And Blood Elves showing up in Stormwind, pretty much the same thing. It's just like, yeah, I don't see it.
I mean, for gameplay purposes, Night Elves are Alliance and Blood Elves are Horde. That's just how it is.
Yeah, pretty much. It's not, you know.
In many of these cases, gameplay is a consideration before story. Whether you think that's a good thing or not, that's up to you.
Alex wrote an article about this, you know, the way.
I did, which I'm not promoting here, but if you want to see it, it's on my Twitter. Gameplay comes first, and in gameplay, Night Elves are Alliance, Blood Elves are Horde. They weren't going to break it just because you wanted a Demon Hunter on the other faction.
Yeah, and...
And in this case, the story supports that gameplay decision anyway, so...
Didn't... I don't know what it was like for the Horde, but the Alliance barely let Demon Hunters in at all. Like, they had got to have a little hut on the very outer edge of the city temporarily.
They're stuck in the place where we kind of all know the Warlocks hang out, but don't admit it. Like, they kind of like, okay, we know there's that bar Warlocks, like, let's stick them over there. They can be out in the like the alley near there. It's got a view of the harbor, so yeah, I'm sure they'll be fine.
A dark and shady corner of the city, so we'll just put them there, and they can be dark and shady there, or maybe the things that are dark and shady will take them out for us after all of this is done.
We'll put them where we hide our shame.
Please go to the shame district.
You know how Horde have like the whole top of Orgrimmar where you fall off and die if you try to get down when you're a low-level character?
Yes.
And nobody actually ever goes up there unless they have a flying mount? That's where they put their demon hunters. They put them up there, like, you know, between the towers of that people, like, get on blimps on. It's totally, like, just shove them over there. Like, you know,
we're just
going
to
put you up there where we don't
have to think about you.
Yeah.
So, I was going to say, if they decided they didn't like them, they could just push them off. But demon hunters can glide. So it's a bet.
I'm kind of fascinated with the idea of Stormwind's shame district now.
The only reason I thought of that is because when you kill Anixia now, like when you kill the Wrath version of her they put in,
you take
her head to the Warlock bar and give it to one of the Warlocks who's like, where did you, how did you?
You take it to the Warlocks?
Yes.
Why? Wait, but you used to turn it into Marcus Jonathan.
Yeah,
I assumed that they had some other equivalent of him.
No, you take it to the Warlock District. You basically take it down to the basement of that Warlock bar, and inside the class, you know where the Warlock trainers are?
Yeah.
There's a guy, one of the Warlock trainers essentially takes the head from you. He's like, what? Why? What did you? Where did you get this? How did you get this? Never mind, here's a trinket. Like, seriously.
Thanks for handing it over.
He's like, but huh? Okay.
Do they even hang the head at the entrance anymore?
No.
So you just go turn it in to some shady little, like...
Warlock who gives
you
an upgraded...
You go to the shame district. You take the dragon's... This dragon's head that is gigantic by any stretch of the imagination because they used to hang it from the front gates and it was huge. You drag this thing to the shame district, stuff it through the front door of what looks like a restaurant, and drag it to the basement and give it to a guy?
Look, yep, we're warlocks. We're trustworthy. We're definitely not going to do anything weird with this head of an incredibly powerful dragon.
That's already dead. Not only is that dragon already dead, that dragon is already dead, has already had its head taken to Blackrock Mountain and put back on its body and reanimated and then killed again.
So do you think that that's how Nefarian got it back?
No,
so
literally.
That he could bring her back in Cataclysm? Like, he got in disguise and went to the Shame District and, like, retrieved his sister's head and took it back to Black.
No, it's that warlocks are the last group of people that can squeeze any usefulness out of it. Everybody else had their turn, turned her into a weird zombie dragon. Okay, well, she's been zombified. Now what? Let's see what the warlocks can do. They're creative. They'll find a use for it.
All they did was make a chair out of it.
Okay, well, on that note, that wraps up the emails, and that also wraps up the show. Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch, and your continued support means that this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your questions answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience.
Thank you, Anne. Again, if you have an email for the show, send it to podcast@blizzardwatch.com with podcast or Blizzard Watch in the subject line so we know it's for the show. We try to answer as many as we can, so that would be appreciated. Thank you guys very much for listening. This has been the Blizzard Watch Podcast. We'll be here next week.
Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battle it out at the French Open for a chance to win a Grand Slam title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. See the action unfold as legends fight for glory and new rivalries emerge. Daily live coverage begins Monday, May 20th, with match replays on demand so you never miss a moment. From the first serve to the final point, Roland Garros promises unforgettable moments and new chapters in tennis history. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.